Dit is geen extra aflevering van de Argonauten, maar een bonus waarin tijdjournalist Roan van Eijk AI-meesterbrein Pieter Abeel verwelkomt. De Tijd heeft elk jaar een groot event, dat heet New Insights, en dan nodigt de redactie een internationale topper uit. Dit jaar dus Pieter, en je kent hem misschien niet, maar het is een naam als een klok in het wereldje. Abeel doseert artificiële intelligentie aan de meest prestigieuze universiteiten. En hij sleutelde in de begindagen ook nog mee aan ChatGPT. Een perfecte gast dus voor een gesprek over AI.
Hi Peter, welcome.
Hi Roan, thanks for having me.
Pieter Abeel in de studio. Of moet ik zeggen Pieter Abeel, want de man woont en werkt nu al 20 jaar in Californië. We spreken dan ook Engels. Met die taal is Abeel intussen beter vertrouwd, zeker als het over deze materie gaat. Because we're going to talk about artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Abeel doctoreerde in artificiële intelligentie aan de vermaarde Stanford University en is nu prof aan de eveneens gerenommeerde Universiteit van Berkeley. Hij leidt daar het Berkeley Robot Lab. Daarnaast werkte Abeel al voor OpenAI, het bedrijf achter ChatGPT, en richtte hij zijn eigen AI-startup Covariant en zijn eigen AI-investeringsfonds AIX Ventures op. Hij won ook al verschillende prijzen en heeft zelfs zijn eigen podcast over AI, The Robot Brains.
Hello, I am Pieter Abeel and I make artificially intelligent robots. We are launching The Robot Brains podcast. Over the course of this series, I'll be your guide on a journey that very few people have taken so far.
Zeker het luisteren waard. Bon, het is duidelijk hè. Pieter Abeel is de perfecte man om te praten, filosoferen en fantaseren over de stand van zaken en de toekomst van artificiële intelligentie. Zelf herinner ik me dat ik meer dan 10 jaar geleden al speelde met chatbots zoals Cleverbot. Die waren natuurlijk lang niet zo slim als ChatGPT, maar ze begrepen vaak je vragen wel en gaven dan toch ook een min of meer relevant antwoord. Dus mijn vraag is, hoe nieuw is dat eigenlijk echt, die AI-hype? So, is this AI explosion that we're seeing right now since the launch of ChatGPT, is that really a revolution happening now? Or is it just a silent evolution that's been in the background for the past few years and is just now surfacing?
It's a great question, and I'd say it's a bit of both. If you look at the details, the technical details under the hood, you're probably more likely to call it an evolution. The big step change happened in 2012. In 2012, Jeff Hinton, professor at the University of Toronto, Turing Award winner, Nobel Prize for Computer Science, he and his students, they showed that they can train an artificial neural network, a neural network that lives in a computer, to learn from data how to recognize things in images. And that was the kind of big eye-opener for everybody in the field. Until then, many people were trying to almost directly program the AI. Think like, what should an AI do? Let me write some lines of code that spell out the procedure the AI should follow.
Right.
But he showed that, hey, don't try to spell it out for the AI. Just give it a lot of data and it'll figure it out from the data. And it was much better than anything anybody had done till then. And that was the big change. 2012, from old-fashioned AI to deep learning, training very large neural networks from data to internalize patterns.
Okay, that's 10 years ago already.
That's 10 years ago already. That's the big change under the hood that happened. Now, the magical thing about these neural networks is that the more data you pump into them, they just keep absorbing more information. And so as our compute power that we have available became bigger, 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 you have possibility to put in more data, more data, more data. And so I think at some point we hit this tipping point where the amount of data that we could put into the neural networks became so large that it became more comparable to humans in terms of performance.
And when was this tipping point?
I think for a lot of people, they would put it probably at ChatGPT as that moment where somehow this neural network, it's still a neural network in a computer, just like back in 2012, but it absorbed so much data that somehow it feels much more real because it's absorbed so much information, this case from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's one additional thing that actually happened. And that's why I say it's also a little bit of a revolution, even if you look under the hood, because for the longest time, people were just pumping in data and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the revolution of ChatGPT is that after pumping in the data, the lead architect, John Shulman, actually one of my former students, he's the one who built this, he had the idea that rather than keep pumping in data, let it generate its own data, have conversations with it, and then rate those conversations and let it try to optimize the ratings it's getting from you. And so there was an additional learning stage where it's trying to optimize the ratings it's getting back from humans interacting with it. And that made it go from a bot that's essentially just generating statistical stuff that you find on the internet, but it's like internet quality stuff. It's not always that great, to a bot that really understands what people want to hear, the style in which they want to communicate it to, and so forth. And that extra step, nobody had taken before on these bots.
Okay, dus artificiële intelligentie die rechtstreeks leert van een dataset, dat is eigenlijk helemaal niet nieuw. Wel nieuw zijn systemen die niet alleen naar de dataset kijken, maar ook zelf conclusies trekken, mits wat feedback, zoals ChatGPT. Dat is dus echt wel iets van het voorbije jaar. Maar waar is het plafond? We hebben met eerdere tech-hypes zoals cryptomunten of de metaverse wel gezien dat onze aandacht, en vaak ook onze investeringen in dat soort dingen, eerst pieken, maar dan weer wegdeemsteren. Is AI gonna be the same way? Is it gonna peak or plateau soon and temporarily at least reach its limit? Or is this different? Is it gonna keep going?
I think AI is fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm saying that is because many of these waves that you see, think about the metaverse, something I personally never really believed in. I just like couldn't understand why people got so excited about it. Who would want to sit in, you know, VR glasses all day, every day, or even an hour a day? It just seems uncomfortable, unpleasant, and so forth. And so these kind of waves were essentially hype cycles where people generating the hype were just trying to pump it up as much as possible to get people excited and get people to buy in and don't miss out, invest now because later is going to be even bigger. You should buy into it now before it's too late and so forth. But the fundamentals weren't really there, right? And now sometimes some of these things can take off. Nevertheless, you get people excited and they get carried away. But then after a while, it tends to subside. With AI, it's very different because if you think about what makes us humans so different from any other animal in this world, it's our intelligence. What we do every day, both for work, for pleasure, our intelligence plays a very big role in that. And especially when we think about work, there's of course physical work, but these days a very large fraction of the work is intellectual work. And so if you think about how much intellectual work we all have to do every day, pretty much, fundamentally, that's stuff that needs to happen. The way the world works, that stuff has to keep happening. Mm-hmm. And if we can get help with that, it seems like, yes, we're going to take that help. We're going to be like, okay, if you can help me get this done, I'm going to, you know, use this tool. And the beauty here is that it's not just that, oh, there's sign of life that this might emerge in the future. Already today, people are using, for example, especially ChatGPT to help them with their work. But then also, as we train larger and larger models as an AI community, these bots will become better and better and better. This trend line is just trending towards stronger, more capable AIs.
So the pace of innovation is just going to keep going at the same rate, maybe even faster as it is now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's a very different stage to be in from even just a year ago, where it was all about experts. And now it's about more about your personal creativity. There's so many possibilities, and I don't need to know AI. I just need to imagine the possibilities of what this thing can do with me, for me, usually with you. It usually can't do things completely on its own, but it's a collaboration with the AI to do things you'd otherwise never do. I've generated illustrations for my PowerPoints with the text-to-image models, and I could never draw something like it. It is just impossible. And it comes out beautifully. I gave a talk for a big company working in the gaming industry. And I said, hey, you know, show me the gaming of the future, board games of the future. And it just came up with stuff. And there it was, like a beautiful illustration that could inspire them and me for this talk.
Ja, illustraties maken, inspiratie geven voor nieuwe gezelschapsspelletjes. AI kan het tegenwoordig allemaal. Je hebt het in deze podcast ook al gehoord, hè? Schrijven in de stijl van Herman Brusselmans of tijdcolumnist Kaiman. de stem van de Zeven-presentator Bert Rijmen of Barack Obama nadoen, muziek componeren, een podcasttrailer samenstellen, het behoort allemaal tot de mogelijkheden. These are all things that it can already do now, and it kind of baffles me. What has surprised you most the past few weeks or months about what AI can already do now?
Things that really surprised me is in the text generation space, like what you mentioned, the ability to generate text in the style of a specific writer. You can just ask, write about this topic in the style of that writer, and it actually comes out that way.
Exactly.
And that writer has never written about that topic before, but AI somehow can, from having seen things the writer wrote about other topics and having knowledge about the new topic, somehow bring it together. And that to me is, in some sense, what in AI we've always been dreaming about, is this notion of not just memorizing things, because memorizing, you know, it's good. It's good to be able to memorize, but it's not nearly as fascinating as being able to generate new things
right,
that are creative. And I think that the notion of creativity is really the new notion in the last year or two, and especially accessible now with ChatGPT and Midjourney, DALL-E, and so forth, that it's blowing my mind what's possible. Same with the art that you can generate. You can have a Van Gogh style, Monet style, or realistic imagery of any kind of scene. I'll do it the way you ask for it. It's pretty wild in my mind that this is possible. Because what it means is that under the hood, it has somehow, from absorbing all that data that it has access to, has understood the underlying patterns to some extent. Mm-hmm. Has understood that there is content to a scene, but there's also a style to a scene. It was never really told about that in great detail, but it somehow has disentangled these pieces of information. And that reminds me a bit of how humans function, right? Mm-hmm. Well, as a human, you look around, you learn about the world, you really break it down into pieces, right? And you understand how things that you see now can help you explain what you see in the future. You see the connections. And I think that was missing for the longest time. And now all of a sudden it's starting to be here.
Gek, hè? Een AI-professor die zelf verbaasd is over wat artificiële intelligentie allemaal al kan. En die tussen de lijntjes eigenlijk lijkt te zeggen dat hij niet altijd begrijpt hoe dat komt. Hoe de AI somehow ineens ook creatief is geworden. Ik wil weten hoe ver dit volgens Abel kan gaan. Kan een artiest die al een mooi corpus heeft aan romans, gedichten, muziekstukken, schilderijen, op een zeker moment dan gewoon beslissen, ik heb genoeg zelf gedaan, ik gooi mijn oeuvre in de AI en die maakt dan wel mijn nieuwe werken?
Maybe they can come up with some sort of a creative prompt and then the AI takes over their job, basically.
Yeah, it shifts. It reminds me of maybe a long time ago, the only way to have music was somebody had to live play it. And so it wasn't just about inventing the new song and recording it in a studio. You had to live play it every time somebody wanted to hear it, right? And then you record it. All of a sudden, it can be experienced by everybody across the world. And now on the production side, yes, you think you're shifting a lot away from operational execution work to purely the creative work. It'll be interesting to see what that brings us, because some of these artists can just focus on the creativity all the time. Mm-hmm. Right now, that might only be a small fraction of their time. So what they're going to be able to generate is going to be fascinating. Mm-hmm.
This is a very optimistic interpretation of this implication of AI, of course. But I do want to talk about the dark side here.
Want ja, die is er ook wel, hè? The dark side, de keerzijde, de gevaren waar iedereen voor waarschuwt. Abel had het daarnet al over Jeffrey Hinton. Een andere AI-pionier, iemand waar hij naar opkijkt. Maar Hinton nam onlangs wel ontslag bij het AI-project van techreus Google, want hij wilde vrijuit kunnen spreken over de gevaren van artificiële intelligentie. Hinton waarschuwt voor gegenereerde teksten, foto's en video's waar je echt niet meer aan ziet dat ze fake zijn. Perfect voor grootschalige misleiding. Hij is ook bang voor, waar we het daarnet al over hadden, jobs die verloren gaan en nog straffer, voor AI die beslissingen neemt zonder daarvoor eerst te overleggen met een mens. Er was onlangs ook een open brief van het Future of Life Instituut. Meer dan 1000 academici en grote spelers uit het veld hebben die ondertekend. Ook Elon Musk, met wie Abel nog nauw heeft samengewerkt bij OpenAI. Het instituut vraagt om een pauze van 6 maanden bij het ontwikkelen van krachtige AI-systemen. En dan was er meest recentelijk nog de open brief van het Center for AI Safety, ook ondertekend door 350 experts en ondernemers met opnieuw hinten, maar ook Bill Gates en OpenAI-CEO Sam Altman, waarin regelrecht gewaarschuwd wordt voor niets minder dan het uitsterven van de mensheid. You're not signing these letters. Are you not afraid of the dangers of overly fast-paced AI development?
I think there's a lot to think about. There's a lot that can go wrong. And so we do have to think about it very carefully. But before I dive into the things that could go wrong, I think it's important to realize what could go right if we do it well. AI could take care of a lot of things for us that right now are hard work, that are painful work, that are possibly dangerous work. And that's kind of stage one. Then stage two, AI could become a scientist, an inventor, and could start doing things like inventing better solar panels by doing better material science engineering, could invent better battery designs, could avoid all car accidents of the future by really getting it right every time.
Right.
If we get to an AI that's really as capable as the average human, it cannot be very far away from being as capable as the smartest human. So you could imagine the AI is another Einstein, but maybe it's like 1,000 Einsteins because you can run it in parallel on 1,000 computers. And imagine putting 1,000 Einsteins to work on today's biggest problems. This is kind of humanity upside. Of course, there's also, that's the tricky part. There's also monetary company upside that drives companies to potentially take risks that shouldn't be taken and so forth. So there's a careful distinction here to be made. There's the upside for humanity that I'm talking about, and then there's the potentially dangerous over-optimizing of companies for their monetary upside at times, right?
Important distinction.
Important distinction. And that's why I think there are calls for regulation and so forth to ensure that there is no reckless execution here. But I do want to remind people that the upside is tremendous, but the downside is also really dangerous. And extinction of humanity is the most extreme in some ways.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, the reason people are worried is because, and Jeff Hinton is a good longtime friend, by the way, and I was mm-hmm. catching up with him a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. The reason people are so worried is that it's going faster than expected. When something evolves at a moderate pace, then we as a society have more time to adjust to it. But when things go very fast, then it's hard to keep up. It's hard to adjust to make sure everything goes the right way. Hence those calls for maybe not going too fast and so forth. The thing that I have seen emerge that is somewhat appealing to me is this notion of having focus on AIs that are, and the devil will be in the details, but focus on AIs that are advisors rather than executors.
Yes.
So you have an AI available. You can ask questions to it. Like you can get advice from on any topic that you might want. But that's different from having an AI available. You just say, go make money for me. And whatever way you make money, you know, just go do it. Because that could lead to very unexpected consequences.
It right? could destroy the world just to make you some money.
Yeah. It could destroy the rest of the world if it takes you literally just to make you some money. Or it could also be, it could be imperfect. I mean, none of these AIs are perfect. It could even try to do things well for the world, maybe. But it's imperfect and it makes mistakes and it takes too many risks and so forth. And so I think this distinction between an advisory AI versus a AI doing things for you is going to be a pretty important one going forward. But that's kind of a new concept that only recently has been talked about.
Mm-hmm. But because there are these dangers and these fears, or at least, you know, projections of them, mm-hmm. some governments are trying to regulate the development of right. AI through mm-hmm. new laws, like Europe is mm-hmm. trying to do right now with the new AI deal. What's your view on this? Should governments regulate the development of AI?
It's complicated, is my first reaction. And the reason it's complicated is many ways. One is that there's no such thing as a world government, right? So if some governments put in certain regulations, doesn't mean they apply elsewhere. And so it could reduce innovation in one part of the world where people are supposed to be more responsible mm-hmm. because of the regulation. But in the meantime, things go wild other parts of the world. And that not sure if that's a better situation to be in where, you know, some parts of the world are so far ahead of other parts of the world because, you know, yeah. the way the regulation influenced things.
Our American businesses developing AI are going much faster than European ones because they are regulated.
Yes. So that's the kind of thing that could happen. And it's not clear if that's all that ideal. At the same time, we have seen things like with the GDPR laws in Europe that, you know, American companies had to abide by it kind of because they want to sell in Europe and then they had to, you know, learn to deal with it anyway. Yeah. And so if the government in some sense is a big enough market, it might be that either way, a lot of the world will follow a suit or at least pay close attention to it.
So that's an example, the GDPR legislation, of a positive precedent that Europe has set. How should we tackle AI in the form of legislation or regulation?
Well, I think there could be a simpler form of regulation. It might not hit every point that you want to hit, but that might be easier to implement, right? And what that would be is to really pay attention to the consequences of AI. So one thing people talk about a lot now is you can impersonate other people, their voices, make fake calls that way, cause a lot of issues that way. And you could even automate that. You can build a bot that makes these calls and tries to scam as many people as possible, making calls all day, every day from, you know, automatically for you. But it seems like, yes, the AI enables this, but if you could just catch the people doing this and punish them hard enough for doing this, it seems like for many of these cases where things go bad, you could actually regulate around the effect the technology has on people mm-hmm. and not allowing anybody to use the technology to impose that effect on other people and going after the people who do it anyway very hard. And so you could start by regulating and going hard on the negative consequences that people might encounter.
Abel vindt dus dat wetgevers moeten focussen op mensen die AI misbruiken, in plaats van de ontwikkeling ervan af te remmen. Fair enough, maar ja, ergens natuurlijk ook wel logisch dat iemand die van AI zijn werk en leven heeft gemaakt, dat zegt. Oké, ik wil het wat spannender maken nu. Ik wil de toekomst zien. What's in store? What's next? What is something you think AI will soon be able to do that will seem mind-boggling?
To me, the next thing on the horizon is automatic video generation. Mm-hmm. I could imagine a Hollywood production where all you have to do is write the script. And even with that, ChatGPT might help you write the script, but you are the creative mind behind the script. And once the script is in place, it gets produced like, you know, $1 billion movie production gets done just on a computer for, you know, $1,000, whatever compute cycles you need to do it. And I think that's going to be pretty mind-boggling that things like that are going to become possible. Mm-hmm. The real big thing in a slightly further future is on the scientific side, I think. Mm-hmm. And so we know that the CEO of DeepMind, Demis Hassabis, started a new company. He's now CEO of two companies. Second one is called Isomorphic Labs. And so, of course, DeepMind, the company behind AlphaGo, and that company is trying to reinvent medicine, building on the ability to have a neural network predict the 3D structure of proteins, mm-hmm. because proteins are the building blocks of life. But the problem is that even though it's very cheap to sequence a protein, know what the sequence of amino acids is, very expensive to 3D scan a protein. And so the thinking is that now that they can just predict the 3D structure with a neural network, well, then you can start trying out different sequences, check their structure, see which one might be plausible for a cure for certain diseases and so forth. And so to me, the most exciting, most revolutionary aspect, but it might take a bit longer, it's a bit harder than the creative things like text and video generation. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised, next 10 years, there are several diseases that we have much better treatments to thanks to AI progress.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how we're going to get there? Because right now we're going through this revolution because we've created AIs like ChatGPT that are learning, but it's not quite there yet. It's not learning exactly as it's supposed to, or not optimally, not like a human, or mm-hmm. better. What are the biggest obstacles AI has yet to overcome?
It's a good question, in the sense that the current best AI systems are absolutely built in a way that's very different from humans. Mm-hmm. Not 100% different. I mean, humans have a brain with neurons, and these current best AI systems are artificial versions of those neurons wired together. But the current best AI systems are essentially built by making them read or watch everything that's on the internet. And from that, they start understanding things about the world.
Enormous amounts of data.
Enormous amounts of data. Trillions of words might be read to get to where they are now. Whereas humans, they acquire knowledge about the world in such a different way. Mm-hmm. And it actually also has a consequence, as far as I can tell so far, in terms of robustness. Humans have a more robust understanding of the world. There are always these funny mistakes these bots will still make that you think, like, how can it make a mistake here? But it's because somehow it's not learning about the world the same way. It's learning about the world, let's say, purely through text. Mm-hmm. And text doesn't capture everything about the world. And so it fails to understand certain aspects the way a human would understand them.
Yes.
In my lab at Berkeley, that's the big focus now. How do we build a more human-like intelligence? And what that means in my mind is really looking at the first 3 years of human life. A lot is learned. A three-year-old can do a lot of things. Obviously, a three-year-old cannot invent the next, you know, big invention just yet. But the thing that's hard for AI to acquire is the things a three-year-old already knows. The things that come after are somehow easier mm-hmm. for an AI to acquire with what we know today. It's that early learning, that grounded learning in how the world works, how you interact with the world, what the consequences are of actions you take. That's the hard thing right now. And so that's what we're focused on, but we don't know yet how to make it happen. We have some thoughts. We think that interactivity might play a big role in this. And the current AIs have very little interaction when they learn, but humans interact all the time. Kids are playing with toys, talking to other people. There is a constant interaction as you learn, which AIs currently don't really have much of. And there is many modalities. Humans have eyes, ears, nose, mouth, touch, so five sensory modalities. And current AIs typically have only one or two, just text, which is not even clear what the exact modality is for humans, but it's text and images.
AI heeft dus nog wel een zekere weg af te leggen. Het moet nog leren om anders te leren. Meer zoals een mens. Maar wat als dat binnenkort lukt? En de AI wordt maar slimmer en slimmer, leert steeds sneller en sneller. En zoals we straks al zeiden, weten zelfs de wetenschappers niet altijd perfect hoe dat gebeurt. We gaan nog een stap verder. Een idee dat ik ken van de science fiction boekjes en filmpjes is de singularity, de singulariteit. Dat is een hypothetisch punt waarop de AI door een soort leerexplosie gaat. Een moment waarna die zo snel leert dat zelfs de computerwetenschappers die hem observeren niet meer kunnen volgen. That's kind of nightmare fuel, right? But with the speeds at which these systems are now learning, I'm thinking it might one day seem plausible. Do you think it is?
The singularity is an interesting concept, right? It's the idea that the thing will keep self-improving at an accelerating pace.
Yes.
Right? And so if you look at what's bottlenecking AI today, I think on the one hand, it's not that interactive the way it learns, making it less robust. On the other hand, it's compute. It's the amount of compute available for it, which determines in some sense the amount of data it can learn from. And we've definitely seen that the big trend is more and more compute. And the more compute you use, the more data you train on, the better it becomes. And so as I see it is that AI should have to design better chips. Mm-hmm. The better compute chips it designs, the better manufacturing processes for these compute chips, the more compute it'll have available, the more it can learn and repeat. And then related to that, energy harvesting, right? So those are the things it'll have to pay a lot of attention to. To be fair, I think those are things humans are already paying a lot of attention to. How to harvest energy the best possible way, but AI might improve it much faster than we as humans can. I mean, there are, of course, also fundamental limits. I mean, how much energy is available on Earth, it depends on, you know, how much energy the sun has provided to Earth in various ways over time, as well as the current incoming energy. And so when I think about these things, I'll often wonder, you know, if the AI is really going to stay on Earth, might there not be a place where there is more energy, like closer to the sun, it can probably absorb more energy than be on Earth, but of course it has to find a way to be closer to the sun and to be viable there and not get destroyed by all the radiation. But yeah, those are some of the things that tend to come to my mind. If the AI really starts optimizing for energy harvesting and compute, is Earth the place it's going to want to be? It's going to maybe just leave us behind?
Leave us alone.
Leave us alone. Be like, oh, these
not want to dominate us.
Exactly.
Or destroy us.
Exactly. Why? I mean, in principle, we should be interesting to the AI, I think. Like, I think an AI that is truly smart, not an AI that is kind of only half smart and somehow gets power, but an actually smart AI should probably know that humans are pretty unique. All the life on Earth is pretty unique. It's not so easy to find in the universe. In fact, we've never found it, right, anywhere else. We think statistically there should be elsewhere, but that it would be, you know, a bad proposition to not try to nurture that and try to help us, you know, be prosperous in every possible way. That's my thinking. Imagine AI would destroy us to get a bit more energy because, you know, we're consuming energy. Like AI says, I want all the energy, but I think what we consume is nothing compared to what it could go get closer to the sun. So that seems like already not a great trade-off. And losing us seems like make life way more boring for the AI. Should be way more entertaining to have us around.
Oef, dus een van de voornaamste AI-denkers. Geloof toch dat als we ooit een elektronische god creëren, eentje die dus ook kan opstijgen om vlak naast de zon energie te gaan aftappen, dat die niet geïnteresseerd zou zijn in het uitsterven van de mensheid, om het met de woorden van het Center for AI Safety te zeggen.
All right, so if we create godlike AI, it's going to be uninteresting for it to destroy us.
Not just uninteresting, it would probably be considered a big mistake. It wouldn't just be ambivalent about it. It would probably say, well, it would be great if I can help humanity foster. If it truly next level intelligence seems a natural choice to me. But I mean, who knows?
Toch een beetje een onheilspellende eindnoot. Maar bon, ik heb in mijn eigen belang nog één bonusvraag voor Abel. Ik ben het grootste deel van mijn tijd producer van De Zeven, de dagelijkse nieuwspodcast van de tijd, die gebaseerd is op wat er op de site en in de krant komt. Ik heb Abel uitgelegd hoe ik dat doe en how long until I can let AI do my job?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it'll be more of a transition where maybe at first it'll make some propositions to you. It'll say, hey, I read the whole thing. Based on what you've chosen in the past, I think you'd probably choose these seven today. Mm-hmm. But there are some, you know, runner-ups also, and you might just, you know, maybe skim everything else, but more carefully read those and be more efficient. And then over time, it might even generate the script that from those seven. Once you selected them, it could probably generate a pretty good script. If you really want it in your style, you'll have to first generate a bunch of these still yourself. I don't know how many you'll need, but probably, I imagine you need at least a few hundred of these, maybe a few thousand. It's hard to predict these things, how many you're going to need. Mm-hmm. I think that's always a big question with AI. It's clear with the infinite data, it's going to be able to do it, but infinite, never available. So, you know, with a reasonable amount of data, is it going to be able to do what you want it to do? It's a big question.
So maybe in a few years.
Well, it all depends. I mean, it's very hard to predict how much data is going to need for that and how much data you're going to be generating for it.
Okay. I'm going to have to renegotiate with my boss.
Yeah, you should negotiate a contract for delivering the results, whether you do it or an AI that you help build does it.
Seems like a pretty good idea. Thank you very much, Peter.
Absolutely, Abel. Rowan. Yeah, thanks for having me.